Hello, welcome to the Lightly in JavaScript podcast. This is episode 55, I think. And as always, I have here with me Arthur Sossins, that is very happy, probably because it's very warm in his country. Hello, Arthur.
Yeah, oh, you could say that, but not by your standards, I think.
It's yeah.
Quite changing here.
Yeah, here is getting colder and colder.
And it's winter, right?
Yeah, it's not. No, it's not yet winter, and it's already very cold. Very relatively cold. It's like 16 degrees or something. And so I guess by the time we reach July or August, it will be even colder. Anyway, we are here to talk about JavaScript, so let's move on with the usual set of interesting topics of the things that have been happening in the JavaScript world in the latest times. I'm going to start precisely with an interesting article that talks about something important, which is security attacks. In this case, started from JavaScript code. And in this article that was posted on the blog of Cloudflare, well, they are concerned because Cloudflare is a provider of content of the delivery network. So they sort of intermediated the serving content of different sites in a way that will be faster for the users, but when you serve pages, you may serve as well JavaScript. So they are talking here about types of attacks that may happen. So basically, in this attack, they mention how distributed denial of service attack could work in JavaScript. So they show here some code that will create a flood of requests for images with different URLs, so the server would not cache the requests. So in this case, it would like send 100 requests per second, which could be already bad. But then they move on and talk about what they call shared JavaScript compromise. And which is basically a way to replace some good JavaScript with an attack JavaScript on a compromised server. Then they talk about something I was not aware about. This in the script tag, you can have some parameters that define an integrity key and a cross-origin policy. And so they also mentioned here that for this to be useful, you need to have some headers in your pages that define the cross-origin resource sharing policy. So in this case, if you are retrieving this code from this URL, in this they mention here jQuery, it would check the integrity by performing computing the SHA-256 to see if it gives this number, this hash value. If not, it is not safe, so it would not load it. Then they continue to talk about man-in-the-middle attacks, which would not be attacking a compromised server, but rather put a server in the middle, which could be somewhere in your network, like for instance your ISP, and we would replace a good JavaScript with a bad one, which would perform the attack. And well, this is a type of attack that could happen. And the good thing is that they mention this, I was not aware about this. Arthur, did you know about these integrity checks that you could enforce in your code?
No, I think that is actually something quite new and probably not yet working in any browser, as they're mentioning it's under development for Chrome and Firefox. But yeah, the need for it, well, as you imagine, as you said, it send simple JavaScript could send 100 requests per second to another website. Imagine if all of your traffic from your website, every user sends 100 requests per second. And yeah, even more, as I described, if they are you're using external dependency, which is used by lots of websites, and it gets modified somehow, then yeah, it's a problem. So this kind of check kind of makes sense, and I actually am surprised why they did not introduce something like that before. They could have done it.
Yeah, I don't know, but maybe since they are a content delivery network, maybe they could actually alter the JavaScript, the HTML to put those integrity check values.
I have used Cloudflare quite intensively on all my websites. They do a good job by not only providing a CDN but also caching and preventing some bots or attacks. So
yeah,
and there are options where you can allow them to modify your JavaScript to improve speed and usability, minify them. So probably they could also do integrity checks too.
Yeah, maybe I'm a bit worried about using content delivery network sites, because I don't know what they can do to alter the could alter the behavior of the site, and all of a sudden some things could not work. But okay, I think this is interesting. Maybe the plan is for them to implement that additional check if you have configured your account to let them do that. Okay, now moving on to another interesting article about something that I also was not aware, which is what they call source maps. And in the the problem is that for instance, if you have to debug some code, you know, and sometimes you are using the
production version,
which is minified,
yeah,
and then you have the problem that when you want to debug it, you can't read your own minified code.
That's a common problem.
Yeah, so they are talking here about something that we call source maps, which basically defines where the debugger can find the non-minified version of your code. So you can debug a cleaner version. Oh, this is interesting.
I think basically you will debugging the clean original version. It will replace your current source code or unmap it or map it to your original source, so you will see everything like it's in your original code. Well, at least I expect it to be like that.
Yeah.
And interesting part is that they showed that Uglify.js, one of the most common minifiers used out there, is already accepting a parameter source map, which what does adds a comment to your minified JavaScript that would link to the source map of your code. So it seems to be already wide generally available feature.
Yeah, well, if browsers understand this control, they might as well and prettify the code again without needing a source map. Well, anyway, but probably the line numbers would not match what you have in your development environment.
Also, variable names would not match because they are also renamed to a smaller one.
Oh, so yeah,
it would be hard to understand.
Anyway, if you use the minified version, the line numbers are different. The variable names are probably different too. So you already have that problem, but for debugging purposes, at least you try the version that is readable. Okay, this is interesting. So now let's move on to another interesting topic that I found out here, but I think you authors know better than me about this, because from what I understood, you have been playing with hardware, right?
Yeah, a lot.
This is interesting. So this is an article that talks about building a security camera using Tesla. So for everybody else that doesn't know what is Tesla, can you care to enlighten us about it?
Well, I don't know if anybody knows what is Arduino. Tesla can be something similar. Basically, it's a hardware, it's a chip that you can extend and plug by different additional components like sensors or camera and stuff like that. And difference in Tesla is that it runs embedded Node.js. So you can write your apps on it, your operational code on it in JavaScript.
Yeah, this sounds interesting. But how does it compare to Arduino-based solutions that already also use Node.js?
Well, I think Arduino uses some kind of its own C++ code. But I think they, apart from the language, they should be on the same level, basically. And what this article actually describes, it's in an interesting way to set up some of the hardware, to use accelerometer sensor, to use a temperature sensor, and the camera. So it takes pictures only where is a spike in the temperature, maybe something is burning, or is a movement, or I think there was also light. So camera will only take pictures when something is happening that you did not anticipate or something like that. So, and you can actually program it in quite small amount of code in JavaScript, and that seems to be awesome.
Yeah, well, for those that enjoy playing with hardware, it can be an interesting solution. I was looking at the examples, then at the end I realized that the source code is in CoffeeScript.
Yeah.
And then you need to translate to JavaScript so you can run it on Node.js. Okay, everybody has their own preferences. So now moving on, talking about something that seems to be the sign of the times, which is Microsoft has released a code editor, a Visual Studio version that works also on Linux and Mac, right?
Yes, and it works with JavaScript, also with JavaScript.
Yes, that's the examples they show here. And it is interesting. I have downloaded it, but I could not understand much about what are the great advantages, well, other than the novelty of Microsoft developing for Linux and Mac.
So what IDE do you use for JavaScript?
For JavaScript, I just use a regular text editor. It doesn't matter.
Then the novelties would be standard features like IntelliSense. Like it would say you beforehand what suggest you methods and variables and stuff like that. But I was kind of keen on to trying WebStorm IDE for some time, but still I didn't. I don't know, probably too lazy. But when I saw this, I saw a video. And they sold me on a couple of things. Well, apart from IntelliSense, which is quite great in Visual Studio, this IDE is not project-based, but folder-based. You open folder, it parses all the files, so it knows all the dependencies and what is what, and knows all the objects and stuff. And it was great. And there were a couple of interesting features, like you could hover on the object and it would display its implementation in the pop-up and stuff like that. What I did not like it, for example, I was using it for Node.js project and I had to include a comment to reference to Node.js function definition or something like that, so their IntelliSense could understand that it's a Node.js environment.
Yeah.
And basically what it means that I need to modify source code with comments to do that, so they would know it's Node.js. So I need to commit the source code, modified source code, to repository used by many other developers with an IDE specific comment, which I don't know, which does not seem right to me. So if anyone would use different IDEs and they would require different comments, that would be a mess.
Yeah. Well, I tried to use it, but the parts about those that you mentioned, I could not.
Yeah, well, you opened only single file, right?
You should Do I have to open a folder, right? Okay, yeah. let's open a folder here very quickly. I don't know if you can see what I showing.
I see only ID.
Oh, okay, because it's in a separate window. So, okay, let's open this. And, okay, I open a folder, and it found, like, three files. There is some... It is complaining. I don't know why.
It's probably expecting JavaScript-only files, not HTML. So what happens if you switch to JS file?
A JS file, it shows...
Everything that seems to be okay here?
Yeah, because I wrote it, and when I write it, everything is okay. No, it's the, how do I debug this, for instance?
Oh, yeah, do you could also, could also debug it, I think.
Could I debug an HTML page? No.
I don't know. I didn't get that far yet. I just tried, so like, on the syntax and stuff like that. But basically, you can put a breakpoint in your JavaScript and then probably press F5 or F7 to build it.
Okay. Just because you said so, I could not see that happening. I can split the windows. Maybe that's because I am not doing something. Oh, debugging.
Yeah, but you're not in debugging mode yet. Try to press play, maybe. That in the debugging
Where is the play?
The green arrow on top. Yeah, does it work?
Please set up launch.
Yeah, you need to probably provide
only Node and Mono applications can be debugged with Visual Studio Code.
So that's your problem. So, I was using JS, and that's why it worked better.
Okay, call me when you can debug. real web pages. It shouldn't be hard, I think. Yeah. Anyway, this is version 1, so cannot complain, I think. But wait a minute. I have a folder, close folder. I have a Node.js project. Let's see if this. Okay, maybe.
Do you have also Node.js installed?
I have.
No, then it should be okay, I think.
Yeah, but I don't know how. Okay. Okay, so. Okay, here goes. This is. Can you see it?
Yeah. So try to click on the process that you have there. Under white and the green. Okay, you can try to run.
Please set up the launch file to debug.
Yeah. Well,
where is the... Please set up the launch application.
Launch JSON, here it is. Type node, program of JS. You need to change the program to the script you are going to run. That was tests or something like that.
Oh, this is the launch thing.
Yeah.
So what do I need to do here?
Probably change a program from app.js to the script that you're going to launch. It's the main file that you're going to run, app.js usually, but in your case it was something else, I think.
In my case, it is this one.
Yeah.
Okay. So I should go there and change it where?
Not
here?
PHP, I think. But
no, it's not PHP.
Yeah, no, it's your PHP.
I see. I copied some comments from... this is lame. Okay, let's copy this and put it there, right?
Yeah.
Just put it... Do I need to save it? Is it automatic?
No. In the program, app.js, you need to replace that. Yeah, this one.
And?
You have an extra S there.
Okay.
Yeah, and I probably control.
Is this all?
Yes. Try to run it now.
I need to put some parameters here because this is a script to test.
Okay. Yeah.
just an email validation component that I wrote. Now I go there and go. Cannot open debug because mono version is required. Oh, I probably don't have mono installed.
Oh, you're on Linux.
Okay. No, there mono is for Linux, but I don't have it installed. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's assume it works. Other than that, we'll get back on some other day. Okay, let's move on with another topic. And this one is interesting because I did not know about this project. And it is called Manifold.js. It is the simplest way to create hosted apps across platforms and devices. So the idea is that you basically can turn any site into a web app without having to...
A native app that runs a web view or something like that, probably.
This is interesting. So if I go here, can generate... If you have a site, you can turn it into an app. I know many people that will like this. Basically, it is saying that I need to define many things here, so I can't try it. But yeah. What if I go there and put manifold.js as parameter? Could it work? Maybe. Did they? No. Creating a site that cannot be used as an example. Okay, but then they have also the deploy.
Yeah, so you can create a Windows app. No, I think Android app, iOS app, and
Android.
OS. Yeah.
And this is interesting. I like this. I just need more time to try it. So basically, you take your site and add some definitions that you can make it work more or less smoothly.
Yeah, but as you see, you can also enter this the data that you would require in manifest. You could also enter directly here in form when you press the generate button. It also provides you form to enter your data.
Where?
Well, you just type in the same PHD or same manifold.js or PHP class, anything you want, and get started. And now there is a form create where you can enter name, short name, icon, URL. It would be the same as using web manifest, I think.
Okay, so you can...
You can enter additional information and put next step, so you would proceed creating the app.
No, oh, okay.
Need to select more stuff.
Member value.
I don't know, really.
Well, I guess we need more time to try this.
Oh, it's already building something.
You know, I clicked to build a package to see if it would work.
And they're going to charge you.
I don't know.
No, it's open.
Usually there is a tab here named pricing.
Yeah. No, it seems to be it's open sourced and I didn't see any pricing, so probably it's free.
Well, it's taking some time. Let's leave it running. Maybe you can get back to it later. Okay, next topic is about some news. We already talked in previous months about io.js,
yeah,
which basically is a fork. Oh, wait, there's a prompt here that you can see it, but
no.
It tells me to save manifold.js to a zip file. Oh, this is interesting. It generated it generated. Let me show you at least what it generated. I guess this is it. This is the folder that it generated. Unfortunately, I can't zoom in. This is a window. So it generated project files for Chrome, Cordova, Firefox,
Windows 10.
Web, Manifest, Windows 10.
Wow. So you can use these projects to generate real apps. Right. No Android and ISL, but probably you need something additionally to do them.
No, you have Cordova.
Oh, yeah, that's right. that makes sense.
So it generates an index file, which, oh, okay. Connecting to device. No, we don't see it because it's in a different window, but okay. It's just an HTML file. And the manifest JSON is also what we've seen in the other window.
Okay.
Okay, I'll take a look at this later. So moving on to the next topic, I was saying is about io.js. There is the version 2.0. I'm not really following this, the io.js developments, but it covered some important features in this new release. So I thought I'll talk about it because it started showing things that we covered before that seemed to belong to ECMAScript 6,
yeah.
Namely classes. Oh, this looks like PHP. and other things like a variable lists of parameters and other things. So I thought this is interesting because this is finally moving on to a more manageable type of JavaScript.
Yeah, basically, so, for those who don't remember, io.js was forked from Node.js by some of the Node.js maintainers that disliked the way that Node.js is developed. It was too slow. And so they forked it and created io.js, adding their own code commits, improving it, adding new features like ECMAScript 6 support, as you see. And yeah, in all the benchmarks that I see, io.js is much more efficient, better performance than Node.js.
Because the thing that I'm missing more on Node.js, because it's still based in JavaScript, regular JavaScript, is that well, at least I think ECMAScript is going to have that await keyword that you no longer have to use callbacks to write your code that will happen after certain synchronous operation finishes, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if io.js already supports that.
Well, it was not mentioned in these features, but they are saying that it supports ECMAScript 6. And actually, with this version, io.js 2, second version, I know lots of Latvian JavaScript, lots of Latvian startups that use JavaScript and use Node.js that are actually now moving to io.js because of the better performance in ECMAScript 6.
Yeah.
So it's gaining in popularity.
So with that, without the callback hell, it will be a great advantage. And if they can run asynchronous code without that problem, it will be a great step to move on. And some people say threaten the popularity of PHP, but I think popularity of PHP is tied more to WordPress and things like that. Nobody's going to switch WordPress to
no alternative to Node.js.
To Node.js, because there won't be those thousands of plugins that exist. Anyway, for PHP, you don't have that yet, but you have it. You have the HHVM, which is the virtual machine that powers the hack language of Facebook. And the hack language already has that construct await for something that can be asynchronous. And you can sort of emulate parallel threads and make things more efficient.
More
anyway,
GSE.
Yeah. Well, anyway, this ties to the next next news. Wait a minute. Let me close some windows here that are confusing. Stuff. 1, 2, 3. Okay. And this is interesting because it's related. Is that io.js is moving to the Node.js Foundation with a merge in progress. So they are going to join the foundation that Node.js people created, which is, seems like redundant, because if they are going to merge, they will be the same thing after all, I think.
And it means we won't have to move to IOJS, because we wouldn't be using already improved Node.js based on IOJS.
Yeah.
Or something like that. I hope so.
Yeah. And this is interesting because, in the end, they were just separated just for a while, and they'll get back, just like we mentioned in the other month. So there isn't much to say about this. So let's move on to the next topic, which is related with an article that tells about how Googlebot nowadays crawls JavaScript. This is an article from Search Engine Land, and basically what they say is something that we already commented in the past, is that Google is able to not only crawl JavaScript files, but also run them to eventually render parts of the pages, so it knows how to index those pages. So this is interesting. Nothing really new that I didn't know, but not everybody knows that, for instance, if you have links on a page and those links are generated, for instance, with components that generate dynamic menus, the Google is able to crawl those.
Yeah, so it can crawl all DOM, generated DOM elements. It could crawl all the links.
Yeah.
The content. But it still does not solve the issue of AJAX request, I think.
It can solve the issue of AJAX requests, because if you have links that have those URLs that use hash fragments,
it is more appropriate now.
Yeah.
But my question is, if I click on a link that changes HTML push state and loads new content, will Google know to re-index that web page?
Well, in reality, they can render the page, considering that you are passing those hash fragments in the URL. So your code that loads your page and checks what is the hash value in front of the hash value, Google will be able to consider that and render the page differently. Of course, if your page is can only load after a sequence of many clicks, probably Google will not get there.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is just to say that Google can find sometimes links that are available only if you have JavaScript. Okay, this is not really so important.
back.
Hello.
So, is it back?
Yes, I don't know why it dropped. Anyway, what was the last part?
About IOJS. Oh no, about Googlebot Crawl.
Did you listen anything about this read remaining library?
No, we did not talk about it yet. Well, at least I did not heard it. I the last thing was about Googlebot. So we can start with read remaining probably.
But did I conclude anything?
No, I don't think so.
So let's restart from the Google crawl. Pretend that we didn't. Okay. Okay, now let's move on with another topic, this time related with Google, specifically how Googlebot crawls JavaScript these days. We have mentioned this before in the past. Basically, there is this article that tells that Google not only can crawl pages with JavaScript, but also can execute at least part of the JavaScript to eventually render and find links, and those are considered for in terms of indexing the pages, and there is nothing really new about this. This is just an article that explains how it works, and just to say that Google can interpret redirects, links, and content that is inserted dynamically, well, metadata and page elements.
I was actually reading on the article, and there are lots of interesting things that it seems that Google can also emulate mouse or something like that, because, firstly, there are it also follows links that are on the click attributes or on the events for the links, so it's not maybe in the ref attribute, but added with the, some kind of event or link, and also the parts that were hidden or generated only on mouse movements, like mouse over or mouse out, it also triggered them and followed those links. So it's really, it seems like Google is emulating mouse behavior to execute these events to follow these links. So seems to be quite impressive.
Yes, this is interesting for those that are concerned about how Google can or cannot crawl. And there are doubts about if they can follow links that would load content using Ajax. Basically, it seems they can do that, but I don't know if they will index those contents with different URLs, which can be retrieve from the push state URLs, this is just here just to mention that they can do that.
Yeah.
So now let's move on, talking about a library that I found interesting. This is basically a library that can tell the user about a certain article. How much the user has read so far, and gives estimates about what remains to be read, how long it will take. So there is a demo here. You can show the article. So if we put it in the beginning, it will show you like.
Can you share the screen?
Oh, right. Sorry, I forgot to do that important part. Okay, now you got it. So this is the page. Click on the demo, and it's supposed to show the estimated. Maybe I should reload this because I have reloaded it before. Okay, it shows an estimate, 12 minutes and 46 seconds. I don't know where it takes that value. But as you scroll... Huh?
Do we have some such time to read it? 12 minutes. You should scroll it faster.
Yeah, well, I don't know where... I don't think this text you take that much, but if you scroll it, it will give a new estimate until you reach to the end. And this is interesting because it reminded me of the Kindle app, which also has that feature of showing how much remains to be read until the end of chapter or at the end of the book, and shows an estimate in terms of time. Arthur, do you read the Kindle books? Have you noticed that feature?
No, I usually prefer real books instead of e-books.
Oh, you are old-fashioned.
Yeah, I'm really old-fashioned.
You like to wait for the books to come.
No, if I'm reading books, it's something I do to, I don't know, relax from the computer, from the tablet or something like that. So I don't like to combine it with the tablet. Well, I have read a couple of books on the Kindle or on the iPad, but I did not enjoy it as well as reading a real book.
Oh, really? What did you miss? The smell of the paper?
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to explain, but it's not the same.
Oh, I don't know. Nowadays, I only read books in the Kindle app, and I read them on my mobile phone. I don't have a tablet. I think tablets are too big. You cannot carry them in your pocket.
Yeah.
So, and I put it in my mobile phone, and it fits well in the pocket, and I can read it anywhere. The size of the text is appropriate. You can always increase the font if you feel it's too small, and it has been good. And so you are not familiar with the Kindle app, right? Or
no? Well, I think that they did not see such features there. Yeah, I have the old one with A ink, it's black and white, so I don't know if it's
right. It works at least as long as you buy the books from Amazon. Because I tried to read some other book from other source, I had to download it, install it directly in the device, and it did not show the estimates. Okay, anyway, let's move on to another topic. This time you're going to talk about the release of Polymer. Polymer is a library by Google, which is in version 1.0, basically allows you to define components for your pages, like new tags, HTML tags, and define their behavior, how they can behave according to user events, how they are rendered, and so.
Let me maybe share a little thing. So I actually checked it also a bit, and it looked to me something similar to jQuery UI library, providing all the components, and is extendable with lots of plugins. But in this case, instead of querying DOM elements to modify, you use it by specifying new HTML tags. Well, as you said, creating custom components. So, as you see on my screen, that here is a code you provide in your HTML, and here is how it would look like for the end user. Ready custom made components to be ready to use in your website. And basically, that's all what Polymer is about. There are also seems to be several categories like core elements or UI elements or e-commerce elements and stuff like that.
Yeah, but does this work on all browsers nowadays? That's the question.
Yeah, I have read that they are using some Shadow DOM shim feature to like recreate them on other browsers, but I don't think it would work on all of them.
Yeah, it would be interesting to know. Anyway, this is the version 1.0. Probably, if it doesn't work now in other browsers, probably it will work later. So moving on with another topic, this time we are going to talk about an article related to the Leaflet library, which is basically a library for mapping, for generating maps. And this article title is Create Google Maps Alternative with PHP and MySQL and using the Leaflet library. So this is a complete application with server-side code implemented in PHP, and it has some code that will JavaScript code that will set up maps and deal with the interaction in JavaScript using the Leaflet library. And this library is interesting because you can use alternative source of maps without paying the Google fees, like OpenStreetMap and what was the name of the other one?
Mapbox,
right. So this is interesting. Anybody that was looking to develop a mapping application, the Leaflet, and was not aware, this article could be interesting. And another topic that may be interesting, it is related with something that we already mentioned today, which is a review of PhoneGap mobile application development book. This book, I have reviewed it, and it talks about implementing hybrid mobile applications using Apache Cordova or PhoneGap, which is basically a derivation of Apache Cordova, and it's practically the same. There are a few differences. The book tells about the differences, but I was studying this because I'm planning to develop an app with some partners, and I was interested to know if PhoneGap could be used with to gain some speed and do not have to study about developing native mobile code, mobile application code for each platform. And this
and
is interesting.
What are your what are your conclusions? Could it be used like that?
Yes, for the type of application that we are planning, it can be used. It can't be used for every other purpose, because sometimes you need to interface with the native features. But nowadays, for PhoneGap or Apache Cordova come with the plugins that provide interfaces to those native features. Still, you need to know a bit about the differences, because there are plugins that are specific to certain platforms, that, and those plugins do not exist for other platforms. But more and more, it is feasible to develop all sorts of applications. Of course, if you need to take advantage of the performance of the mobile device, probably hybrid applications are not the way to go, because you have they render inside a web view, right?
Yeah.
And so there are probably other faster approaches other approaches to develop faster code. Not that you would be faster to develop, and we have talked about, for instance, native script recently. It does not use a web view; it just to develop native applications using JavaScript and CSS, not HTML pages. And other than that, there are certain concerns, like the look and feel must be as close as possible to the native look and feel of the application. So if you are concerned about that, either use some library that tries to emulate the native look and feel as close as possible, or probably some users will find a bit hard that your application looks different in their own devices. But I don't think every user is that picky. Some users might find it odd. And also the book covers about some concerns of having your applications being accepted in the each app store. So I talk a bit about that in the review. So if you want to know more, there will be a link in the show notes for you to read the review and figure if using PhoneGap or Apache Cordova would be a way to go.
So with this, we are going to move on with the next section, on which we comment about the Innovation Award, first of the JS classes. Okay, let me share the screen here. Okay. So we are going to start talking about the winners of the Innovation Award edition of March, which they were voted in April, and in May the results come out. So since we have already published the results, we can talk about these packages. Artus, which packages would you like to comment first now?
Okay, let me comment on. First one is AdBlock Detection for Google AdSense, developed by Suresh Kumar from India. And what this package does, it tries to check if there are any JavaScript elements in your web page that are trying to load AdSense, because if they are not there, then probably they were stripped out by an AdBlock. And this package also reports it to a Google Analytics. So inside Google Analytics, you can see how many visitors of your website have disabled or enabled ad blocking and disabled AdSense. So you can see how many of your visitors can see your ads, and then you may try to think of other ways to monetize this. So that's why I really like this package.
Yeah, and it can be useful for knowing which users are presenting ad block. There are some users, not many, probably like 10% of the users use ad block. They don't like ads. It's okay, it's their option. They are not supporting those that produce content and need the money generated by the ads. But, okay. That's a different discussion. And anyway, in the case of this class, it is useful, as you described, to at least know if ad block is being used to detect blocking of AdSense ads.
Yeah, so as I said, you can try thinking about other monetization methods. So, and Suresh Kumar got one book of choice by PACT for this package. Second package I wanted to comment on is JavaScript HTML5 Fire Reader, which basically uses not like a standard HTML file input, but trying to use HTML5 Fire Reader API to retrieve contents of the file. So it's it would provide even more than like when you upload, if you use it, the file input, you usually simply upload it. But with it, you can use the same file input to read the file in the same web page without even yet uploading it. So you could like display a thumbnail of the image you are going to upload, or display contents of it. I recently also used similar in the app I was developing, so it's quite a great addition, and this package would simplify the work that you would need to check availability and work with files. So it was developed by Andras Tosz from Hungary, and he got a downloadable webhook of choice by O'Reilly for this package.
Yeah, and I also like to comment a couple of other classes. Let me share the screen here. Classes objects. And this one again is from Suresh Kumar from India, and he has this class, browser-specific CSS, which uses a clever trick to page, you can use different CSS sets of definitions depending on the type of device that they're using. So he defines certain styles. It's probably better to look at the code very quickly. We don't have much time. Oh, I forgot to log in. Yeah, because I was in another machine. Okay, here we go. So this class, it's minified. We're not going to see it much. I have to unminify it. Let's see. I don't know if there is unfortunately, it did not provide a regular class, but it defines some sets of styles, and depending on the platform, it will match the names of the styles with the type of browser. If you are in Windows, if you are in as you may see here. So depending on the browser, you can have styles that match the different browser, and use just JavaScript to achieve this effect, and it was quite interesting. Okay, now moving on, the other class that I wanted to mention is one called Encyclopedia. This is not very, very trivial to understand. It's from Rian Salawi from Indonesia. And he provides an interface to access, a large set of value pair objects, but it employs a trick to minimize the loading of the everything into a large object. So it can load small objects that provide access to parts of the a bigger object, which could be an encyclopedia with names and the respective meanings. And about the JavaScript, let's see how it is going, the Innovation Award rankings for 2015. Sharing the screen here again. Well, so far, this includes already the winners of April, because the results come out. So far, Anders Toth is leading with 3 packages and 10 points, followed by Suresh Kumar, that raised also to the first place, again with 3 packages and 10 points. Then Gianluca Zanferrari with 1 package and 7 points, Jackson Knowlton 1 package and 6 points, Stephen Chapman 1 package and 4 points, then several other authors with 1 package and 3 points. And by country, the rankings are still pretty much the same, except that instead of names of authors, we have countries, because there is only one author per country, unlike the PHP classes. The JS class is not as popular, but we still quite have a nice collection of packages. The first one is Hungary with 3 packages and 10 points. The second one, is India with three packages and 10 points. Then Netherlands with 7 points, United States also with 7 points, but 2 packages. And then follows Australia with 1 package and 4 points, and several other countries with 1 package and 3 points.
Okay, well, with this, we are practically in this podcast. I'd like to thank you again, Arthur, for coming. And I know that you are going on vacation, but I think you'll be back before the next podcast, right?
Yeah, I should.
Okay, that's good to know. So on my behalf, that is all for now. Bye.
Bye.